You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Seitz.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech. Perry's on vacation this week, so I have a professional friend and contact of mine from Waco who is my co-host. That's Mark Trice.
Hey, good morning, Don.
That's not morning there. It's noon, right?
No, it's not morning here, but it is morning there. So I'll just I'll talk like I'm talking to the local listeners there.
Well, that's who you are talking to. So whoever's listening, we're mostly local. There's a few around the country. But this is the Investor Resources Live radio program. You have questions about what's in your portfolio or your friendly financial advisor has recommended you make a major change or even a minor one and you just want a second opinion, you can give us a call. The magic phone number for access today is, as it was last week, 800-465-8770. And give, I think Andrew's on the desk today, so you can give him your question and he'll let us know you are online and waiting to talk to the Puget Sound area and points beyond. The number again is 800-465-8770. And a reminder that we are at the end of the month. We're very close here to wrapping up February. And the first Saturday of every month, we do our webinar, Stock Market Update, find out what's going on and see what kind of transitions have been happening in the market. You can register for that at our website, IRIradio.com. That's IRIRadio.com. That's March 4th, 8:30 in the morning. We run an hour, have time for Q&A, and we do cut off at an hour break because we have to get ready for the radio show.
And it's one I never miss, Don. It's always a useful presentation and talk every month, so even I join it.
Well, and we're glad to have you there. You give us, particularly as a professional, you give us some really positive constructive feedback, and we do a questionnaire afterwards, and that also gives us a guideline about what we need to do for program adjustments. We keep trying to improve that, give constructive information. It is not a sales pitch. It is an analysis of what we see going on in the market. We want the people who contact us about managing their money to be informed about the pablum that the financial services industry has used as a foundation for years. If we do things differently, and we do, we want you to have an education beforehand so you know this isn't the same old 60 stocks, 40% bonds, buy and hold, and eventually it'll all work out routine. And one of the things that hasn't been working out quite the way as expected is inflation. So the heat is back on. And Mr. Powell, chairman of the Fed, has warned repeatedly that there will be some pain to bear. And Thursday and Friday, investors waked up and said, he must be serious. This isn't going to be as easy as we thought.
And that I thought the White House said that inflation was over, Don.
Well, yeah, but you know the White House has a history of lying.
So oh, no.
whatever they say, we put a discount on it. In fact, we actually need to do some discounting even with the other government agencies that are telling us what's happening. So the Labor Department reported that in consumer prices rose 0.5% in January from December, and then they raised the December's change from a minus 1/10 to a plus 1/10%. So that, and the volatile food and energy prices are excluded, because if you go to the grocery store, you'll know that the price of eggs, depending on what part of the country you're up in, is anywhere from 10 to 15% higher than last year. In fact, I was in Fred Meyer, which is my primary grocery store, and I was going to buy eggs. And there were 4.5 doors of eggs that were empty.
Wow.
There were a few cartons of eggs. I happened to have, wasn't pressing need. I had enough to get through another week, so I decided I'd wait a while. But, I mean, there's 4.5 doors of shelves that are normally stacked with eggs, and there's nothing in them.
You think people are hoarding now, Don?
Yeah, I don't. Hoarding eggs doesn't last very long. Yeah, basically, we're stuck with a really confusing market here with no single sector or market theme actually leading. Things are kind of in turmoil right now. Utilities, consumer staples, low volatility stocks managed to beat the S&P last week, but they've been out of favor since the first of the year. Those are defensive things which are showing some sign of revival, but not enough that we would want to commit our portfolios to them just yet. So underlying economic data for the U.S. still looks pretty good. I mean, we have GDP and retail sales have been recovering, but as Mr. Powell warned, inflation could be sticky, and that is a problem.
And if you look at, the 0.5 increase and 0.5% increase in January, Don, you extrapolate that and annualize that, that's inflation still going around 6% for this year. And so that's heating up quite a bit.
And that's going to make it really difficult to get inflation or the target inflation back to 2%. It's going to take more time. And that's part of what kind of roiled the market the last couple of days is we have to rethink this. The assumptions that were made last month that the Fed would be able to reduce interest rates this year is kind of unwinding. If you want to get a copy of our weekend review, we put that out normally on Mondays. This is a holiday, so it'll be Tuesday. But you can send us an email if you aren't getting it already. Send us an email to help@iriradio.com. Put week in review or WIR or newsletter in the subject line. We need your first and last name in the body of the letter so we can set you up in constant contact. If for some reason you become one of those rare people who unsubscribes, it's just a one-click process, and you come out of the list and you never hear from us again unless you turn on the radio or call us. Anyway, this CPI hike is problematic in more ways than one, because normally the CPI report is a two-year combination number, but this year the Department of Labor has changed their process. And they're only using the numbers from 2021. Now, that's happened in a lot of areas here in finance where the formula for reporting has been altered, which makes comparing it to the past not as meaningful. All we can deal with is, as we say on a regular basis, all you can deal with is with the information that is in front of you.
That's right.
There is no such thing as a valid forecast. You deal with what you know, you make your best adjustment, and then you prepare for the tide to change again, because it will. Whether you're in a boat or an airplane, you know things are going to change. Whether you're driving, none of us drive a straight line. No pilot flies a straight line. Everything's a mid-course adjustment.
And well, there sure are plenty of people out there that are providing their forecast out there. There's no shortage of forecast of people, experts that are willing to tell us what the future is going to hold.
Well, that is certainly the truth. That is the reality of where we are. And if you want a forecast, they're easy to get. I mean, you just turn on TV. I listen to Fox Business during the day. And there are people there all day long who say, and my program is here because we want you to make money. and then they never tell you specifically what you should do. So they interview analysts and portfolio managers. And I one that was on yesterday, and what are you doing now, miss? And I don't remember her name. And she said, well, you know, we're dividend investors. So that's basically what they do. And so we like dividend stocks. Well, any particular ones? Well, we do have some favorites. But that didn't help us actually figure out what we should do with the portfolio. But apparently theirs is all dividend stocks. And so you can get dividend stocks in all sorts of categories.
I'm guessing that they have a special fund that also has dividends for you to buy.
Look, more than likely, there are a number of them. And that's interesting because, Mark, since you're in the business as we are, you get these emails too, where an ETF sponsor or a mutual fund sponsor sends us an update. This fund was so successful last year, it brought in $20 million of investor money.
Oh, yeah, I've been getting a lot of those.
Go look it up on the stock charts and say, well, they had a good sales pitch, but as far as owning it last year, that wasn't such a good idea.
Not always, no.
So the sales pitch and performance are two different things.
Well, Don, we're coming up here on a break in just a moment, and I want to remind everybody that you need to go ahead and register for IRI's monthly update. That's going to be on March 4th at 8:30 a.m. You can go to IRIRadio.com. That's IRIRadio.com. Click on the webinar page tab there on the middle of the page there and put in your name, email address, and you'll be registered. You'll get a reminder the day before, I think the hour before that webinar starts. So if we're taking calls right now, the lines are open. Give us a call at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Investor Resources Radio.
Mama said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this, Mama said.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we saw on Friday. Actually, on Thursday. Friday wasn't that bad. We just simply didn't have a lot of people who were in the market buying. And if there aren't any buyers, particularly on a low volume day, which is typical of preceding a 3-day weekend, without a lot of buyers in the market, the only people left are sellers and market makers who have to maintain liquidity. So that has generated a level of uncertainty in the last couple of days. But as I was doing my end of week review earlier this morning, looking at the charts, and all of the selling the last couple of days is basically inside what we would call a trading range. Yeah, so it dropped a little bit, but it didn't fall out of bed and collapse. Yeah, probably some individual stocks did, but as far as the major indexes are concerned, it's noise. What are we going to do about the Fed's interest rates? Well, we're going to have to live with them being higher a little longer, and there's a division of opinions among the Fed presidents, the regional presidents, and that's no surprise because we're human. So we have from St. Louis, we have Mr. Bullard, and Chicago is Ms. Lester, and both of them made announcements on Thursday. They're making speeches, not calling a press conference, but they're doing speeches as they typically do, and both of them said they had been in favor of a bigger interest rate hike this month, which means we're likely to get a bigger hike maybe next month instead of the quarter and then none and then a cut. So the entire assumption that's driven the market since the end of the year has been the Fed has whipped inflation, it's dead, or it's going to die this year. And what happens in the months ahead is the Fed will be cutting interest rates, and we're going to be back to a more normal market. Hallelujah, and stocks rose. Thursday, that story unwound. It just simply doesn't look like it's going to be reality anymore. So as we deal with this, the forecasts have to be changed. And, of course, as I said before the break, when you're watching them on TV, it's easy to get confused. J.P. Morgan, for instance, said that in their forecast that they recently posted and made public is in the first half of this year, the S&P 500 is expected to retest the lows of 2022. That'd be the October low. But the Fed could pivot, which means they could quit raising rates, and drive an asset recovery later in the year all the way to 4,200, which isn't much higher than where we were on Wednesday.
So they really don't know what it is, what's going to happen with the markets.
We could summarize that and say the market should go down, but it might go up. That helped you a lot, didn't it?
Of course, yes.
Jeremy Grantham is he's a lot more bearish. He figures that the S&P 500 should, with expected inflation, should be about 3,200, which means it's going to drop 15% or so from where we are now. And that's a 3-to-1 probability, but it's certainly not the Goldilocks pattern of the last 20 years. Basically, his opinion is markets are going to implode. There we go.
Doesn't sound as positive.
They may go down. Goldman Sachs, they're more positive, basically saying it's going to grow, but very slowly. We need labor market rebalancing to solve the inflation problem. Well, at least they don't accuse the Fed of causing the inflation, because the inflation came from massive government largesse, doling out money, borrowing it, doling it out without any expectation for who gets it or any kind of repayment. But basically, the forecasts are, which one do you want to believe? Which is why looking at relative strength and momentum is what it is in the market. And that's all you know. You can assume, as we do, that trends will persist because they have a tendency historically to do so. But just because we buy into a rising trend, there's no guarantee it's going to continue to rise after we buy. And we may end up recognizing that it's falling apart and something else has gone into leadership. And that's when, through rules and discipline process, you adapt to the new reality. I mean, I kind of think of my raising teenagers. You had to adapt to new reality frequently in my household because you never knew what the kids were up to. And the market's much the same way. It can throw a fit for what seems to be no reason whatsoever. And all of your best research is just trash, and you have to go do something else.
I think that's why so many people using relative strength and momentum to respond to the data that's out there just ignore the forecast. We don't listen to the forecast because they really don't mean anything.
That's true. And in almost every part of our society, we recognize performers. You've got the Emmys and the Academy Awards come to mind. We have the Super Bowl. And there's all sorts of major sports awards, and we put the people who are really good in there as a Hall of Famer. Not in the financial services business. There is no Hall of Fame for forecasters. Doesn't exist.
Nope, and they just are usually wrong. You know, Don, I was trained as an economist, and I worked for a regional economist on the East Coast. And And oftentimes when we go talk with a client about forecast they want it done, we would ask them point blank, what's the question? What do you want it to say? And that's why I don't trust forecasters, because they can make the data say anything that they want.
It's called data mining, right?
That's right. That's right. And it leads to believe that these pundits, these fund managers that are coming on the television to talk about things that are going in the markets, they're maybe just trying to sell their product, or they may not, like in the case of the one you told us about just a moment ago, they might not have a clue either. You have to respond to the moment and the data that's presented to you and follow the trend.
So it begs the question, why is there a forecast business? Well, for one thing, our brains hate uncertainty. We mm-hmm. hate loss twice as much as we like gain. We don't like to quit. We want reinforcement so we can stay in the game, and forecasts provide a comfort that maybe this person knows something, obviously, that I don't know, and it feels good and right, so I'm going to follow that.
Well, they're on television, right? So that makes them right.
That's right. That's right. We can make positive, aggressive, feel-good decisions with actually a false sense of security. So forecasters stay in business because we keep them in business. We reward their firms with investment dollars. We buy their subscription services, and the ball just keeps rolling on down. But there is no forecast that's right all the time. Occasionally a forecaster who has good reputation, he's very popular, and I think of Jim Cramer on television, been there a long time. And every now and then he has a really good forecast that works out. But it's impossible to do that with as many forecasts as he makes, as often as he makes them. We talked about that a bit last week. So we end up with basically taking a look at an industry that sells well with gloom and doom. If an expert is warning you that the market is about to crash, check their math.
Mm-hmm.
There is an ecosystem of analysts who we would classify as alarmists.
This is becoming quite the business these days.
Yeah, it is, but it's actually been around for a long time. I was in a network of advisors years ago, and the key person in there was a publisher, published a newsletter. And every quarter when we got together, we'd ask, well, so how are sales? And he said, sales are fine. When sales get bad, when people quit renewing their newsletter, which happens about the third year, then we put out a very disturbing market crash impending headline newsletter, and subscriptions rise. Doom and gloom sells newsletters. Performance technically will keep people in line on renewal, but that's really hard to do in a market that is so dynamic, and which is why you need a process of constant review. That constant review isn't just rebalancing your account because your 60-40 stock bond portfolio is a little askew. It's actually looking at what do you own. I've used this illustration before because Perry and I were on the radio back in 2011 on another station, and we said, you should get out of gold and emerging markets. That was July of 2011. And for 10 years, both of those asset categories did nothing but go down and down and down until 2020, when the COVID market collapse suddenly brought back investors, and those two categories had a phenomenal year and then have been drip, drip, dripping until December, when we got another turnaround, which is in the process of weakening again. But if you're in a standard portfolio, you just have some sort of arbitrary commitment to gold. You have an arbitrary commitment to emerging markets, when in fact they should be there sometime, but not all the time. And the question is, how do you monitor that? Do we have a process that does that? I mean, that's what relative strength and trend following does. It says these things,
that's right.
they don't make
that's
sense
right.
anymore. They're,
well, Don, let's talk more about this. Let's talk more about this on the other side of the break, because we're coming up against one right now.
Okay.
I want to remind listeners that you can sign up for the Week in Review email that Don and Perry put out. Just go to send an email to help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. Make sure you put your first and last name in the body of the email so they know who you are. And you'll get that email every week. It'll be there to help you kind of sort through the financial news and make sense of all that's going on out there. Be sure to call us. Our lines are open. Give us a call at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. We'll be right back.
You got to know when to hold up. Know when to fold up. Know when to walk away. And know when to run. You never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done.
Well, that little piece of bump music by Kenny, I would say Kenny Rogers, is that right? Particularly when we're talking about how do you make decisions, and most people don't make decisions. I mean, when you're looking at a standard portfolio, when people bring us their portfolio and say, well, what do you think about what I've been doing here? And it's basically something close to a 60% stock, 40% bond portfolio. And once in a while, typically quarterly, we check and see if we're still 60-40. And if we're very far off from that, we just sell our winners and buy our losers, and then we go back and win
that's
another
not good.
Quarter and see if we need to do that again. But that's not a process of solving the problem of getting things out of the portfolio that are in a losing trend, as bonds were last year. People think of bonds as the safety valve for the portfolio because they're less volatile than stocks, and therefore if I don't think I can handle risk very well, we'll put more bonds in your portfolio. Well, we don't, but that's the standard pablum that people have been programmed to believe. And yet last year, bond market lost almost as much money as the stock market did. That's not much of a safety valve. And that doesn't happen very often. It happened back in the Depression. I don't remember if it was 29 or 30. But
31, John, 1931, yeah. That's only happened twice, and that's only happened twice where both bonds and stocks were down by more than double digits, so by more than 10%. It happened last year, and it happened last time in 1931. Very rare.
So we see analysts on television and the emails we get that, well, 60-40 hasn't died. It is now alive again because interest rates are starting to fall until last week. Until the Fed said, no, they're going to keep rising. And the assumption by the bond traders had been that interest rates would top out somewhere around 4.25, 4.5. And now it looks like it's going to be closer to 5.5, and it's going to take at least another year to get there. So that's not good for bonds. Rising interest rates cause the value of bonds to decline. It's a teeter-totter. Interest rates on one end and value on the other, and they don't both go up. One's up and the other's down. It's just the way the math works on bonds. It's not the supply-demand issue that stocks have.
Those bonds, last year ended a 40-year bull market in bonds. We've had interest rates falling for the last 40 years, and now they're not.
So the question is, how long will they continue to rise before inflation is quipped and starts to fall so the Fed can ease interest rates? When that day comes, loading up on long-term bonds is going to be a real winner. Right now, personally, I think that's a little premature, particularly because the Fed says we are going to raise rates, and we are going to keep raising them until this thing is solved. Well, they need some resolution from Congress and the administration to quit spending money, because that's where the problem originated. You want to talk to us, we have an open phone line, 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. Register for the March 4th stock market update webinar at irradio.com. That's irradio.com. One of the issues we were talking in the first segment about the data, inflation data, and the fact that they've changed the way they're reporting that. One of the other issues is the confirmation issue, and we use leading economic index to try and estimate where things are going. The problem is, while they call it a leading index, it's really old data. By the time they publish the index, we're another month or month and a half downstream from that. So we're looking for confirmation because it makes us feel good, but it's actually not what should be in front of us and what we are looking at. Interest rates have historically been a predictor of recession. When the two-year rate is higher than the 10-year rate, that's called an inversion, and they are more inverted now than they have been in decades. So the discussion about a soft landing or no landing at all seems a little out of place historically. We don't know when a recession is likely to come to pass, but with the bond market structured as it is today, it seems inevitable that one will arrive late this year or sometime in the next.
And the government doesn't want to have a self-fulfilling prophecy here. If we all believe we're going to have a recession, we might make it come true. We'll stop spending. We'll do different things and behave differently. And the government doesn't want that to happen. So the messaging has all been around a soft landing.
Well, and consumers, however, are going to do what they need to do to maintain their households. And there's two things that are happening. One of the pieces of good news this last week, and actually this last month, has been that consumers are continuing to spend money. And the companies that are getting that money are saying, our sales are higher. We're beating our revenue expectations. And the answer is, that's real. But what they're not doing is selling more stuff. The reason retail sales are higher is because of inflation. People are spending more and getting less for it. And we see that in two areas, one of which is product shrinking, and the other is that credit card balances have hit a record high. They exceeded the previous high in 2019. So assuming that tomorrow will be a better day and we're going to get a pay raise, people are loading up on their credit card to maintain lifestyles. That's not a winning economic proposition. At some point in time, that debt has to be paid for. And we're getting a crunch that has not yet shown up in corporate profits. Then I think the next quarterly reporting season, we're going to see some real adjustments. I would expect to see some real adjustments downward for profits, corporate profits.
Yeah. Don, we've got a
from a year ago.
Yeah, Don, we've got a call coming in. Now we've got some technical difficulties today, so I'd have to relay the question to you that our engineer has taken in the studio. This is Robert from Reben. Robert is asking, are we at risk of repeating what happened in the 80s by having inflation take off again and having the Fed having to more aggressively raise rates?
Well, I think the time period for the aggressive inflation was the 70s. What happened at the end of the 70s, Paul Volcker in 79 basically changed Fed policy because inflation was really out of control. And he said, I'm going to raise rates. And he did. Inflation started to back off. And I think in the second year of Reagan's administration, inflation started up again. So Mr. Volcker aggressively raised interest rates until it took another 3 or 4 years. And that finally stopped it. Borrowing money got so expensive, it didn't make sense to borrow money to expand your business or to buy anything. And the spending quit. And demand slowed, and that allowed supply to balance itself out. And I don't think we're headed into that kind of 70s type of inflationary scenario. The problem that we have here is generated because of the shutdown of COVID. And back in the 70s, what we had is we had the baby boomer population that was overwhelming the demand for things that were in short supply, housing, educational facilities, schools, elementary schools, high schools, colleges. I mean, it didn't matter. As the baby boomers came through the pig and python story, there wasn't enough to take care of them. And today, that problem doesn't exist. We have an arbitrarily imposed supply problem because of government policies, which, as we look at them historically, it seems like they were unnecessary to deal with COVID from what we know now. But be that as it may, that's what we're adjusting to. Will the Fed raise rates more than they're talking about? That's a possibility. We don't know, but we do know that that Mr. Powell is saying that they're going to be a lot higher than the market expects. And the question is, who's right? The Fed that adjusts their own policies or the bond market that's betting they won't? And those are the two opinions in the marketplace. But I don't think we're going to see the interest rate that and the inflation rate that we saw in the late 70s and the early 80s. So thank you for your question, and thanks for being out there listening in our audience. With that, that opens up a phone line again, 800-465-8770. So part of what happens with investors is too much rearview mirror investing. And the press doesn't help us with this. Now, one of the things that you should pay attention to, and we've mentioned this from time to time, is that if you are in a mutual fund or an exchange-traded fund, or you've been investing with a manager, and you happen to be in front of a magazine stand, and you see your manager or your fund on the front cover of a magazine, get out of it.
Run.
Go, yeah, run. I mean, those things happen at the peak after a long run of success. Kathy Wood is known as a manager who runs her ARC, A-R-K, family of funds. Back in 23, February, in fact, that's not, this article was just posted. That was this February of 23, about a headline that was in the Intelligent Investor a while ago. And it was how a flood of money swamped Kathy Wood's ARC. She has several funds. ARC-K is the innovation fund. That's the future technology fund. The tech companies that will, and I believe she's right, will eventually replace the ones we take for granted today, the Amazon, Microsoft, the Apple, Netflix, the Googles. They're all big, behemoth companies. And like IBM was back in the 80s, and a little guy in a garage knocked them off their pedestal with something called DOS, and it became Microsoft.
Don, we're coming up against a break. I want to hear more about Kathy here when we come back on the other side. Folks, you can give us a call. Lines are open, 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. Do not forget, March 4th, 8:30 a.m., is the monthly market update. These are great webinars to listen to. You can go to irradio.com, irradio.com, and register for that. Click on the webinar tab on the home page there. And when we come back, we'll continue our conversation here. And you've been listening to Investors Resource Radio.
Darling, you got to let me know. Should I stay or should I go? If you say that you are mine, I'll be here till the end of time. So,
well, that's what investors want to know all the time. And that's what we want to know all the time is, should we stay or should we go? And in a standard portfolio, it really doesn't matter, because you're basically going to stay and hold on. A 60-40 balanced portfolio is a buy-and-hold portfolio with minimal adjustments to major changes in the market.
So you're saying buy, hold, and pray.
That's right. So when we went to break, I had mentioned the flood of money that had swamped Kathy Wood's ARK funds. And that article came out at the top of the market a year ago, back in January of last year. And she'd had a phenomenal year. She had huge returns. And they've happened before, periodically, especially when she was a small fund. Now, a year later, from the same author, we get the headline, "Why Investors Are Piling Into Funds That Promise Not to Beat the Stock Market." Both of those articles were written by Wall Street Journal's Jason Zweig, who's in the financial industry, he's well known. But basically, the ARK funds are an aggressive growth fund, and the funds that promise not to beat the stock market are covered calls. And they come in, they came into popularity just as the market was bottoming in December and turning back up. So the headlines like that are always, I'd say almost always, a day late and dollar short, as the old adage goes. Not everybody intends to invest money in speculative stuff only after it rockets higher during a bull market, and in defensive stuff just after the bear market has ended. But that's the way it happens. For Kathy Wood's ARK Innovation Fund, that was ARKK, the ticker, the first 2 years, 15 and 16, it gained less than 2% cumulatively. Well, that doesn't attract investors.
No.
But then in 17, it's up 87%. Well, that gets your attention. And so money piles into it. And in 2018, it earns 4. That also sends people out the door. In 19, it earns 36%. And in 2020, 157%. That's 57%. 157. That's why the money piles in, only to face one of the worst bear markets that we've had in many decades. It's buying late, and then at the bottom, it didn't work out the way they thought, and so now they want to sell.
So that's a good time to. That's a good time to. That we have a caller, Carol from Tacoma, was asking or basically telling us she got out of the market in the fall, and I'm guessing around October, and she doesn't know what to do about getting back in. How can the processes that you and Perry use help her safely re-enter the market?
Well, what we do is no secret. There's a lot of manual and books written about it, and there's software that's not expensive to get some training. But basically, we have developed a universe of exchange-traded funds that we believe have adequate volume to be able to trade and are reasonably priced from an expense ratio standpoint. So we don't look at 2,100 funds every day. We look at this universe. And so that's problem number one, is define what the universe you're going to work with. And then relative strength is a function of learning how to read a stock chart and draw some trend lines and work with moving averages and have a set of rules that say, when this happens, I'm willing to buy, and when this happens, I'm willing to get rid of what I own. You end up with criteria that says, I believe this trend that's going up is in my favor, and I'm willing to put money into it because certain things show up on my chart. Or I own stuff, and it's not working out the way I thought. You have to remember, you're not married to what's in your portfolio. That is there temporarily to assist your wealth building. And if it's not assisting it, it should go. Own leadership and sell laggards. And relative strength or trend following, momentum-based portfolio structure, I think is the only process that has a real firm definition of getting rid of the junk in your portfolio. Everybody else, all the other processes basically say, well, it's not working right now, but it will sooner or later because the market always goes up. I'll just wait to get even before I sell it. Well, that just means you've wasted an awful lot of time and return on your capital. We use a software program called available online. It's tc2000.com. You can subscribe to it for, I think, about $30 a month. You get all your pricing. They have videos that will teach you the basics. And there's lots of stuff that you can read on that. But that's what we do, and we've spent the last, well, since 2010, when we abandoned 60-40 models, learning how to read the stock charts and process those decisions, build our rules out of that. So it'll take you some time to do that, but that's where I would start. If you go to investopedia.com and search for momentum or relative strength, that'll give you some background and education about what you need to learn to begin to do this yourself. And as our initial instructor told us, it'll take you about 5 years to get comfortable doing it. And even then, you're going to have periods of time when you're looking at the charts and making a decision and saying, my gut says no, the chart says yes. Do I stay or do I go? And you're going to have to make the decision based on the rules you've set up. And that's what we do. We have rules. We follow those rules. And as Perry and I often say to one another, man, I don't like doing this. But that is what the rules say, and that's what the chart says. And Mark, I know you've had the same kind of experience with the process of learning how to do this.
It helps take the emotion out of it.
Yeah, if you're investing with emotions, you're going to end up in trouble. That's pretty much guaranteed. One of the other problems that thank you for your call. It's a good question. And actually, if you want more feedback on that, call me during the week. The number in the office is 800-317-9119. That's 800-317-9119. And I'll be glad to chat with you a little more. I can offer you some more guidance and some books if you want to do this yourself. It's not rocket science. It just takes time and commitment. And that program that I've recommended, TC2000.com, it's cheap, and you get real-time pricing. I mean, it's not a come-on. There's nothing extra to buy from them, and you can run your portfolio with that. That is what we use. That's the core of our evaluation. Now, we don't trade through that program. We go to Schwab, where our clients' money is actually held, and we place our trades at Schwab. But one of the other problems that people have in terms of looking at their portfolio is they often end up with a target date for retirement. And some of this is cultural conditioning, which came about because Social Security had a retirement age of 65 when it was originally set up. And that age was selected because they figured half the population would be dead before 65, a lot of which was due to we didn't have antibiotics, we didn't have penicillin, and we had a lot of industrial accidents, on-the-job stuff. And people just didn't live to 65. So we could plan on a retirement program at 65. That's not happening today. The real problem that you have with why it's important to understand what you're doing in your portfolio is you might live longer than you think, and your finances might not. People think they're going to die within a given period of time. They take a survey of 65-year-olds, the majority of them thought that they'd be dead within 10 years. 10 years later, the majority of them were still alive and were likely to live another 10 years. The number of people who are going to live beyond 85, 90, or even 100 is increasing exponentially, and the resources generally are not. The number of people solely dependent on Social Security at 65 isn't very high, but by 75, it's more than doubled because other finances have run out. That requires a rethinking of what am I going to do with my resources and managing them. I mean, as a financial planner, I've had people come in and say, well, I'm 65, you know, let's start taking money out of my IRA or my 401k. And say, well, wait, no, let's just wait a minute here. Why are you doing that? And with what you want to spend, what happens if you end up with a healthcare emergency or chronic healthcare problem that requires a lot more expense than you're thinking of right now? Are you going to spend a slug of money buying an expensive RV and traveling the country only to find out that you come back and you contracted something serious, or you have an accident and you need more care and you just spent your wad and now you're on welfare? Have you considered these scenarios, and what are you going to do about them? Well, hanging on to a portfolio that's buy and hold and just saying, yeah, it'll all work out, that's a little overly optimistic. Well, I hear the music at the end of the show, so we're out of time. You want to talk to us during the week?